Brothers and sisters, please pray with me. Holy Spirit of God, take our minds and think through them. Take these words and speak through them. And set our hearts on fire for love of thee. Amen. Please be seated. My eye was caught this week by a title of an online article suggesting the five-day work week is dead. Now, prosecutors have been making that claim for quite some time. One of my former employers was motivated to do its part in decreasing Houston congestion and improve our air quality by giving workers a 980 work option, where over a two-week work week period, they would work 9 hours over 8 days and 8 hours over 1 day to have every other Friday off. Employees liked this flexibility, having a four-day work week every other week, evidence that the 980 work option did supply an improved sense of work-life balance for workers. But I just don't know how successful it was in making improvements in Houston's congestion and air quality, since these issues seem to be as bad as they were when I left Houston 10 years ago. But that is the case in all metropolitan areas, right? The article that caught my eye this week focused mainly on current labor policy and practices in America, current topics, particularly the plight of hourly workers and non-living wages. But it caused me to reflect on one of the myths we were sold about technology decades ago. It was supposed to make all workers' lives easier, wasn't it? Thank you for the laugh. From roboticized production lines to time-saving equipment for office workers, technology promised that the future would provide easier jobs than back-breaking work and even more leisure than more work. It was supposed to give us more work-life balance, remember? Long before we were blessed with our smartphone devices, I wondered about that forecasted leisure time when I was saddled with a pager, able to be reached by my employer at any day or time, and was checking my emails along with my colleagues on that astonishing device called a Palm Pilot as we waited to start meetings. I remember at one of these meetings, an older manager bewailed the lack of pre-meeting chit-chat now that we had all been issued those handy little Palm Pilot work efficiency tools. And I know I'm showing my age, but even talking about a Palm Pilot. But that's the American way, isn't it? Those who came from elsewhere and landed on these shores beginning in the 17th century carved this country out of the wilderness through sweat and hard work. Coined by early 20th century sociologist Max Weber, it's that Protestant work ethic, that drive of sacrifice, discipline, and labor that birthed and helped our country grow and innovate. This is a source of our pride. The ability to outwork anyone else. As evidence of this work ethic's influence in my own family's experience, my sixth grade educated cotton farmer grandfather would often tell my father in his childhood, boy, if you don't have nothing else to do than cause trouble, go dig a hole and fill it back up. Work-life balance is a foreign word to many of us, not just us Coxes. So I've been interested in the conversation of work-life balance over the last years as the lines of demarcation between work and personal life have not just blurred, but have been obliterated for many. While there have been business failures and job losses, there has also been, as one pundit described it, those who place work above all else. There were those workers unable to work from home who were considered essential and had to risk their health and safety for the good of all of us and to support their families. Workers to this day to which I am deeply in debt. The pandemic limited our ability to be with friends and families, but it didn't limit some from working and working and working at all hours of the day and night, trying to keep up, proving they could work from home, and perhaps because they felt the burden of their privilege to work from home while others could not. If it wasn't obvious before the pandemic, there is a crisis of work-life balance in our highly technology-driven modern culture. Today, Jesus gives us a master class in work-life balance. It may not sound like it from our chopped-up gospel reading from Mark's chapter 6, where the lectionary compilers took 4 or 5 verses from the middle of the chapter and added them to the 4 final verses from the end of the chapter. So I may have to fill in the gaps for you that our lectionary developers inadvertently created. Come away. Come away, Jesus tells his hyped up, overworked 12 closest followers. Come away and rest for a while. Earlier in this chapter, Jesus had sent them off, ordering them to take no provisions, but step out in faith to spread the good news, heal the sick, and cast out demons. We are painted a verbal picture of people incessantly coming and going in and out on this mission from God. This busyness seems to imply that they are having success in their mission. But they were also taking no time to even eat. Now, fasting and hunger were not part of Jesus's sending out instructions. So Jesus compelled them to stop, get in a boat, and sail together to a deserted place for rest, recovery, and physical and spiritual nourishment. You see, the good news was spreading rapidly, and Jesus was a hot commodity, so that wherever he went, crowds would follow him. The good news for us is that Jesus had divine compassion for these people. They were sheep without a shepherd. And so when they follow him around the lake, he went ashore and set aside the planned quiet retreat and began to teach the people. I don't know about you, but at first blush, this gospel reading makes Jesus look like he flunked the work-life balance test. That's when this chopped-up reading needs to be supplemented by the actual text from Mark 6. For included in a good chunk of those missing verses is, first, a story of Jesus being rejected by his hometown, and then also the beheading of John the Baptist, Jesus' cousin and prophet in arms. Jesus has a right to be sad, maybe even a bit cautious about what is ahead for him. He is as ready as the disciples are in need of rest, to be tucked away in a quiet place. But our good shepherd has compassion when he sees the sheep lost and in need of a shepherd. He sits and teaches into the evening hours and provides one of his miraculous feedings in the wilderness to 5,000 people, a story we'll be looking at in next week's gospel. After the leftovers have been gathered, Jesus sends the disciples back to their boat. He then goes by himself, we are told in verse 46, by himself to a mountain to pray. And we have to assume that as when most people in the Bible go to a mountain, Jesus has an encounter with God and is restored and refreshed and recovered from possible compassion fatigue. And that's a good thing. As our final verses from today's gospel tells us, for more crowds rushed to see him, bringing their sick and crowding around to just touch the fringe of his garment. While living in Waco at the first parish I served after finishing seminary, I found myself in a rent house that needed a bit of work. In this particular case, a chimney needing a cap and having a damper stuck partially open. After being out of town for a week on vacation my first spring, I came home to discover a bird nesting in the chimney. I could hear the sweet, soothing, cheeping of a nesting mother chimney swift. A few weeks later, I realized her eggs had hatched as I heard the sweet, cheeping of baby birds and occasionally the rush of wind that indicated when a parent had arrived with food for the babies. This sweet bucolic scene lasted for several weeks. Then almost overnight, her infants grew into loud, demanding children, causing a ruckus in my chimney. The cacophony seemed to grow louder and louder with each feeding, with the feedings becoming more frequent as the parents worked themselves into a frenzy in an effort to satiate the demand of their growing baby birds. Feed me now, these babies would cry to their overworked parents over and over and over again. Maybe some of you human parents out there can relate to these winged parents. And the story of how the birds got out of the chimney, well, that's a tale for another day. The most salient characteristic of life, early 20th century philosopher José Ortega y Gasset wrote, the most salient characteristic of life is its coerciveness, is always urgent, here and now, without any possible postponement. Life is fired at us point blank. Whether it be human children, work deadlines, home improvements, or over-scheduled retirement years, we seem to have these unrelenting voices crying out to us urgently, feed me now. Life is always fired at us point blank. Too often we feel that no one can do the work in our lives except for us. No one can perform what is needed or provide the love and care like we can. We feel that if we step aside to catch our breath, we will be out of the running or let down our team or our family or ourselves. Our out-of-balance sense of self-importance, perfectionism, or a warped view of responsibility can lead to burnout and exhaustion. We need to remember that our God is a God who works and who rests. We read this fact in the story of creation when God rested on the seventh day of God's work in creating all that is. We read how God's Son, Jesus, knew how to rest and did so in order to fulfill his ministry here on earth. Now, maybe I'm just preaching to myself today. But if we get caught up in the sin of our own self-importance too often, our lectionary compiler's chopped-up job on today's gospel can supply a caution to us. The last four verses from chapter 6, positioned at the end of our gospel reading today, speaks in code of God's ability to find workers in spreading the good news with or without our help. For how else did the people who swarmed Jesus and the disciples on the other side of the lake know that all they needed to do to be healed is to touch the hem of his garment? Sounds like the woman healed from hemorrhaging that we read about last month in Mark 5 has been getting out the word to others about her miraculous healing after merely surreptitiously touching the hem of his garment. Maybe those who viewed this extraordinary feat have also passed the news on about this amazing healer, Jesus of Nazareth. Maybe the crowd's appearance on the beach wasn't solely because of the work of the 12 Jesus sent out. Maybe the hunger and exhaustion of the 12 wasn't necessary for the work of God to be accomplished. Our God is a God who works and who rests. Through our gospel reading today, God is encouraging us to do the same, to build this pattern of work, creation, service to others with a heavy dose of rest, daily, weekly, monthly, yearly. Do this for yourself, for those you love, and in honor and respect for our God who works and who rests. So be sure to take your summer vacations. Rest, recover, restore. Take time periodically to stop and rest when you resume your post-summer lives, and come back reoriented by living a life of constant renewal, so that we may be able to do the work God has given us to do, taking care of our families, supporting our friends, helping our co-workers, being at ministry together here at St. Martin's, keeping all this in balance physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Come away, Jesus is saying to us. Come away and rest for a while.